Okay, you've got the numbers. The phone lines are open. Let's get your take on what you think is going to happen in 2012. Or perhaps you also have a question for Barbara Hand Clow. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara, I'm at least pretty excited about the fact that you believe that it's not over for us after 2012.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Amy from Chicago.
Hello there. Amy in Chicago?
Well, my birthday is December 21st. And, Barbara, I'm going to be ketons old on 2012? Anyway,
okay.
I have several of your books, and one of them is The Pleiadian Agenda. And I was wondering, it's been a while since I read it, but was some of the information channeled to you from the Pleiadians, or did you ever have a conscious contact with one?
Yeah, for the Pleiadian Agenda, New Cosmology for the Age of Light, was channeled by me in the fall of 1994 and the spring of 1995. And that's the only one of my books that's channeled. Certainly the Mayan Code is not. And what happened with the Pleiadian Agenda was that it was a whole cosmology regarding nine dimensions of consciousness. And it's also a fairly scientific book, even though it's channeled. And so I spent the next 8 or 9 years trying to understand the book myself. There's a lot of information in it about superstring theory, quantum mechanics, and various scientific issues. And so in 2004, I wrote a book called Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, which is a scientific examination of the Pleiadian Agenda. So the reason the Mayan code is, the reason I'm bringing all this up, is that the Mayan code actually has the final solution for some of the issues that came up in the Pleiadian agenda. In other words, it's taken me basically 12 or 13 years to understand my own channeled book. And at this point, I feel that I do.
Amy?
Are you there, Amy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So according to the Mayan code, the one dimension that I did not figure out when I wrote Alchemy, I couldn't figure out the science behind it, was the ninth dimension, which is the highest dimension, which according to the Pleiadians is located in the galactic center. And so at this point, I think the Mayan code truly comprehends and explains the ninth dimension.
Well, doesn't our solar system come around to alignment with the galactic center?
Yeah, we actually came to our this is the alignment of the winter solstice sun with the galactic plane, and the closest alignment was actually 1998. It really occurs over a period of 50 years, but the closest alignment was in 1998, and that turned out to be really, really significant, because what happened during this close alignment is that the high-latitude glaciers started rebound. They had been pressed down by the weight of the glaciers for the last 11,500, 12,000 years, and for the first time, they started rebounding. And then at that point, the Earth developed a bulge at the equator, which was visible by satellites. Now, this is a really significant level of change on our planet. And also, I think that regarding global warming and why the glaciers are melting at the poles, well, wouldn't you wonder whether glacial rebounding might have something to do with that? And yet, people didn't pay a lot of attention to this.
Well, in 1998, didn't we also enter the photon belt? And would that have some effect on the solar activity?
Yeah, one of the things that I channeled from the Pleiadians was this whole issue about the photon belt. And we actually have been going into it actually for around 50 years. But the photon belt so far is the only part of this material that I've not been able to verify scientifically. And so it's still like a channeled idea from the Pleiades, which I think seems to have validity. But what's amazing is all of the other really wild ideas that came through from the Pleiadians since 1994-95 have been verified by science.
Barbara, who are some of the people in this field of 2012 that you admire?
You know, I really admire the latest book called The Mysteries of 2012, which you probably had some of those people on. The basic editor, I think, is Greg Braden.
Yes.
And I really liked it.
John Major Jenkins has been on. We've got a lot of these people.
Right. And I really like that book because a lot of the people in the book are futurists, and they're also looking toward a critical leap. And I really, at this point, you know, things are so tough right now that I look around pretty hard for intelligent people who can see how we're going to come through this thing and how we're going to come out of it. So I actually admire that book a lot.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please. And where are you calling from?
I'm in Tennessee.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Your guest had mentioned that these underworld time periods or whatever, and how they'd been shortening up or speeding up. And
right.
I guess my thinking of it when you said that is that it's making sort of a pyramid,
mm-hmm.
you know, the older being larger, and then up to now where it's really a small, shortened.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we use images like that to explain it, as a matter of fact.
Okay, and maybe that's what the pyramids down south and everywhere.
Yeah, that's actually true. The pyramid of Tikal in particular, which is in Guatemala, actually really expresses the nine underworlds very well.
Okay, and then my other comment would be that since the Mayan calendar ended, maybe we're going to see an inverse, and then instead of an underworld, be kind of tied in with last night's guest with kind of like the rings of heaven or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't listen last night, but I had one student who just came up with a really amazing drawing like that of showing like what's going to happen once we start to go into those higher levels. And I personally can imagine it. I can tune into angelic consciousness pretty easily, you know.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate you being on the show. First time caller line. You're up with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I had a real quick couple questions for Barbara.
She's here. Go ahead.
Okay. Barbara, I've actually been doing a lot of personal research on this matter. For the past couple years, I've listened to Michael Tessarion and some other, you know, people have done research on this. Basically, what my question is what is your standpoint on the Nephilim that they've found?
On the what they found?
Nephilim.
Nephilim, yeah, right.
And Nibiru, the planet X.
Right.
That's supposed to come into our solar system and kind of, you know, change the world. I mean, I know that the Mayans ended their calendar, but back then they didn't really have technological advances to support life past, you know, something that's going to be this devastating in 2012. So I do believe we will survive. But exactly where will be the safest place for us to live when this goes down?
Well, see, first of all, I don't agree with this theory on Nibiru and the Nephilim. This is coming from Zachariah Sitchin and the 12th planet and various works. And I've actually written a lot about that because it's what I call a theory of misplaced concreteness.
Okay.
I really actually don't think this is what the Sumerian scriptures actually say. As a matter of fact, I think the Sumerian scriptures are a description, the Enuma Elish, are a description of the category that happened 11,500 years ago. So I went through a whole process myself with Sitchin's research, because when I first encountered it, I thought he was right, and at this point I don't think he's right at all. So I just don't, I'm not seeing a cosmic catastrophe. In fact, let me put it to you this way. One of the reasons I wrote Catastrophobia was I came to the conclusion as a healer and a therapist that one of the things that we're doing as humans is we're projecting the event that already happened into the near future. In other words, we had a cataclysm. It has not been that recognized by science, what actually occurred, common science. And so what we're doing is we have all this inner trauma within ourselves and fear from what happened before, and then we project it into the near future. And I call that catastrophobia.
Catastrophobia.
I call it a syndrome. It's a syndrome of projecting past cataclysmic experience into the future because we haven't processed it within.
Let's go to our next caller, the wild card line. Hi there.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
My name's Eddie. I'm in Dallas.
Hello, Eddie. Take it away.
This also goes back to the guest you had in the first hour of the news of Japan
Nick
opening
Redford.
Up
yep.
a little some documents
mm-hmm.
Of aliens and talking about her spiral. At the end, in the middle of that spiral, has to be a dot or that the event that's going to happen. And we have seen frequently more sightings of alien craft, a lot more reports of them coming out, other government people talking about them. Could that be what is going to happen in 2012? Is that right now they're getting us ready, and we're seeing the quickening of that, and in 2012 is when we'll have the contact.
Yeah, no, I really address that issue very clearly in the Mayan code regarding a field of science called exopolitics. And the basic premise of exopolitics is that we have been quarantined on this planet from what they call universe society, which would be the cosmic their cosmic realms, and that we have been quarantined because we're so violent and dangerous. And I actually think that the real issue with the Mayan calendar is the Mayan calendar is actually showing us that as we come to the end of the calendar, our quarantine is going to end. But the only way our quarantine can end is if we become a peaceful species. And so this is why I've stressed peace to such a degree in this book. I actually think the quarantine is going to be lifted, and I think we're going to be part of the universe again.
All right, International Line, take it away. You're on the air with us.
Hi, it's David from Victoria. Got through. And anyway, talking about the end of the Mayan calendar, certainly, and, it, you know, of course, the calendar, any calendar, is a way of measuring time based upon the movement, celestial movement, the movement, the rotation of the Earth, the revolution of the Earth around the Sun, and the Moon around the Earth. This is the basis of our present calendar.
Every calendar except this one.
Uh-huh. Well,
yeah, in other words, this one is spiralic. In other words, I agree with you. I take almost any calendar, and what you're going to find is you're going to find a series of circular cycles. But this one operates like a spiral.
It was my conjecture that if the calendar, and the Mayan calendar inclusive, but maybe I'm wrong, ends, that may be an indication of a change in those mechanics, in the celestial mechanics, and the end of one way of measuring time.
Right, and I've actually also written about that. In Catastrophobia, I dealt with the possibility that the Earth first became tilted in its axis only 11,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only person who thinks that. There were a number of Greek scientists who thought so, and there are still people who think so today. And so I actually think it's possible that what's going to happen is some of these orbital anomalies, like, for example, Uranus is tilted 90 degrees on its axis, which I also think happened 11,500 years ago. So I think you may be onto something there. It's very, very difficult to prove any of this. You know, like I've researched it, but it's hard to prove it.
May I take a moment to relate a meditation that I have, a vision I had that relates to this specifically? It was in a meditation, and I was on this Grecian-style patio, and seeing this classic robed old guy, and in front of him was a globe that looked like carved out of granite in a granite kind of rib work, sitting there spinning on an axis tilt like our Earth does now. And then he said, kind of communicated to me, watch this, and the Earth kind of wobbled like as if a gyroscope had been bumped. And then after some wobbly motions, righted itself to now be spinning vertically, not with a tilt. And it was communicated to me in your lifetime.
That's very interesting because in 11,500 I wrote Catastrophobia with an Oxford geologist and a science historian, and they believe that when the fragments of the Vela supernova came into our solar system, that Earth was so strongly affected that it actually became an icosahedron. And if you look at the plate tectonics of our planet, that the plates, the fault lines, actually do look like an icosahedron. And so we seem to have, now this is very, very far out stuff, but we seem to have been made into a form that basically represents a platonic solid. And then it's certainly possible to me that we would then reach a point where we would stop tilting. I actually think that's what's going on, but boy, I can't prove that one.
Thank you. And if it's the aberration is that we are on a tilt, it may not take all that much energy to push us right.
Yeah, and then, of course, needless to say, there would be a lot of shifting around on this planet if something like this occurs.
Are we going through another shift right now, Barbara, to the point where, you know, the magnetic poles are slowly moving? I mean, what happens when we make this full tilt?
Yeah, that's another piece of this, which is the magnetic, magnetic field dropping to such an extent. And I don't really think anybody knows what would happen to us if we did go through a polar shift. But the Pleiadians gave some interesting information about that. And what the Pleiadians said was they said that if you look out the window someday and suddenly you see things going sideways, they said shut the blinds and don't look and just sit and meditate. In other words, they seem to be conveying the idea that this was going to be a consciousness shift, and that if we were too focused on what happens at the geophysical level, that we might miss what's going on.
Okay, next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, yes. This is Shirley from California.
Sure.
And I'm familiar with Barbara's work. I have a few of her books. She kind of touched on the question that I just was going to ask about how the human beings would feel physically with this change of the dimensional merge. Mm-hmm. Also, will crystals help having them around you? Moldavite is another stone that is really good for bringing about help for clarity, for change. Have you heard of that?
Moldavite is, speaking of exopolitics and the quarantine, Moldavite, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best crystals to work with to communicate with extraterrestrials. I think it's actually a direct link to extraterrestrial realities.
Well, recently I have acquired the Moldavite, and I've been wearing the stone with crystals on my person.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of changes, like epiphanies for me, that are very strange, that I've never thought of things before they're coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, at this time frame where it's starting to happen now, I'm wondering, too, will the beings that are knowing that we're going through this big change, will they be able to assist?
Yes, I see things in a very positive light. I really feel that the reason everybody's afraid of extraterrestrials is basically because of Hollywood. I really am just appalled sometimes by the projection going on regarding extraterrestrial species personally. I actually think we're missing out on communication and communion with really, really great beings.
You don't think they're out to get us then, Barbara?
I don't think they're out to get us, but I'd like to bring up another thing, which is the issue of the grays and the issues of people, of abductions and things like that.
Because we think that's happening, right?
Well, right. A lot of people think that's happening, and a lot of people have really strong feelings about that. And having thought about it a great deal, I noticed that when people have experiences like that, some people will see grays or aliens, different aliens, and other people will see the Virgin Mary or whatever they see. And I think what people see and experience has something to do with how much they process their own fear. When people have these kinds of experiences, which I basically have all the time, but I'm not a person with a great deal of fear. And so what happens for people when they have alien abduction experiences is they usually go through a very difficult but very important personal transformation. A lot of people really change and evolve as a result of experiences like that.
All right, stay with us, Barbara. You keep calling. Barbara will keep talking. We'll keep her for another hour after this half hour ends. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with your phone calls. And Barbara Hand Clow on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, remember our program note. We will have live programs for you on Christmas Eve and on Christmas night. Live programs. We're going to be here for you. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls. We're going to keep Barbara another hour as well on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara Hand Clow, our guest. Barbara, with time acceleration, doesn't mean we're getting older quicker, does it?
No.
It just
means that the way that we're changing and the way that we're evolving is going faster. And I certainly, it'd be pretty hard to argue against that if you look at things over the last 250 years, for sure. and especially since 1999.
Back to the phones we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Pramil from Fresno. Hi, George. Good morning. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi, good morning.
I was just wondering, Barbara, if you're familiar with Ian Sell Lungold, who is a very close student of Dr. Kahneman.
Yeah, the appendix in my book is Ian Lungold's Mayan calendar tech system. In other words, yes. I didn't meet him. He died about 3 years ago, and I didn't meet him. I actually had to work with his partner in order to bring it through. But it's one of the appendixes in the Mayan code.
And tell us about him.
Well, he was just a wonderful Mayan researcher, and his way of helping people understand how to use the calendar themselves, in other words, day by day, day signs, is just excellent. So I just used it just because it was one of the best ones.
How do we know the calendar's not off by 50 years or 100 years?
Well, the daykeepers in Guatemala and in remote areas of Mexico have been keeping the calendar day by day since 500 BC. And so, in other words, in the modern world, they are still keeping the calendar day by day, and they've been doing it for 2,500 years.
All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Thank you for calling Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
I would like to ask if George Bush continued his term to under state of emergency for another 4 years, so 2012, if Hillary Clinton could get elected, if that would be the turning point.
What I did in the Mayan code was I cataloged the issue of America as empire, which has basically been what George Bush has been doing since 2000. And what the Mayan calendar shows is a gradual loss of power on the part of America as empire. And so I cataloged that year by year. Now, how that works out in presidential politics is another issue. But I definitely can see by means of the Mayan calendar that the American empire is not going to succeed.
Well, under its present course and direction.
Right, but it's not only under its present course, it's not going to succeed, period.
Really?
Yeah, that's what what I showed in the Mayan code is there, two of the chapters go year by year. And remember, now we're going back to 2006 when I turned the manuscript in, and the predictions, you know, for the fall of 2006 and through 2007 so far are 100% accurate. So then the question is, are they going to be accurate in 2008 and 2000, so on and so forth? But definitely, by using the Mayan calendar, I can see that what I call the Bushites are not going to get away with it.
Well, does this mean that, of course, the Bushites are going to call you and they're going to take an issue with that?
Well, that's okay. I put it right in print. That's fine. I don't see why America as empire has to succeed. One of the things that we see analyzing the calendar is the day for empire is over with. And so one of the things that has gone on during the last 6 to 10 years regarding, say, the invasion of Iraq is that European countries have already done that and they had enough of it.
Is that one of the reasons, not the Iraqi situation, but is this why we're being pushed into a one-world government?
I think that that's over with, George. I mean, in other words, that's what's been going on during my whole lifetime, the push toward one-world government. And I really think it's breaking down.
Okay, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Go ahead. Hello, east.
Oh, George Noy?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. All right, cool. My question for Barbara is, what do you think would be different if the Mayans were alive today?
The Mayans are alive today, and as a matter of fact, I've got a lot of Mayan pals, and there's millions of Mayans, and they're all very, very involved in the culmination of the calendar. They're doing major, major ceremonies, sometimes tens and 100,000, even a million. I've seen at Teotihuacan. So the Mayans are very, very much alive at this point.
So the Mayan culture from thousands of years ago still around, basically?
Well, yeah. It's first of all, it's the same race of people, and secondly, they're following the same calendar, and thirdly, they live in the same region. So they're still there.
All right. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George and Barbara. How are you?
Hey, great. Good. Thanks.
I'm a little nervous. This is my first time calling, but I, too, believe that I may have been contacted by the Pleiadians. Late one night, I was contacted by a being that said that he was from the second planet in the Pleiades star system.
Mm-hmm.
I never really got specific, like, their names or anything like that, but I was given a symbol. That it's very simple, but it just means a whole lot. And I was wondering if you got the symbol. It's a large triangle with parallel lines at the top and a circle at the bottom.
I've seen symbols like that, yeah.
Yes, and... Yeah.
And it means a lot to you, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That means that it has something to do with your energetic system and the way in which your consciousness is evolving. Because we, each one of us, we have our own symbols that really, like, go right to the heart, you know?
Yes.
And a lot of them, see, the Pleiades are really interesting because if you look at it from an anthropological point of view, people on this planet have been reporting contact with the Pleiades for at least 40,000 years. And so it would appear that we have a very, very long-standing, deep relationship with these beings.
Do you feel like how is it that they chose me out of, you know, millions of people? Maybe was I open to it, or it just came out of nowhere?
I think, number one, that you're open to it. But also, they are in contact with a lot of people. And as we let go of our prejudice against that, see, in my case, I was trained, not only in part Native American, but I also was trained by my Cherokee grandfather as a child. Mm-hmm. And so I was taught that I came from the Pleiades as a child. And mm-hmm. when I went off to the first grade, I had a very, very big shock because that's not what everybody else thought about themselves. But for me, and by the way, the Maya also feel that they come from the Pleiades. So there's a lot of indigenous people on this planet who feel that their star origin is the Pleiades. And what cuts that off is believing that it couldn't possibly be true.
How is it that I can get further contact? I mean, I don't have any more contact with them. It was maybe a year ago, about 2 weeks in a row.
Right.
I've got several contacts, and then that's been it. So
yeah.
I feel like I've lost contact.
Besides meditating, there are, of course, different people who have written, different authors who really have written a lot about the Pleiades. Besides myself, for example, I really recommend Barbara Marciniak. I don't know if you've read Bringers of the Dawn or any of those books. But certainly reading authors who are in touch with the Pleiades tends to trigger you.
Okay, let's go next to our wild card line. Your turn. Hi there.
Hi there, George and Barbara. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Yeah, from Port Hueneme, California.
Sure.
I've approached prophecy as a Christian for several decades now, and coming from a scientific background, I'm trying to rationalize, how's the Lord going to pull off all these prophecies? And looking at Revelation, until I found that we're approaching the galactic plane, then things started to click in my mind. Large celestial bodies in our solar system, anyway, seem to have rings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if we're going to encounter a ring at the galactic plane of the Milky Way.
It's possible, you know, like for example, in the Pleiadian Agenda, which came out in 94, 95, which is channeled. That's my channeled book, my only one. What came through from the Pleiades was a whole issue of entering a photon band, which was like a ring of light.
Yeah,
but I've never been able to verify that scientifically.
I'm just wondering, at 2012, we'd find a very fine ring of, intergalactic stuff.
It's certainly possible. Yeah,
we'd have to plow through, and would account for a lot of the things that you like I read in the Book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's possible.
And we're approaching it from above the plane, relative to our Earth spinning toward the South Pole, and we really wouldn't see anything coming because most of our observatories are in the North.
Yeah. No, I think that's possible, and the Book of Revelations is fascinating.
Have you always been a positive person, Barbara? Because I don't hear much negativity coming from you.
Actually, no.
No, you haven't?
I haven't. I mean, no, not at all. It for me, I'm having this wonderful experience of having all of the things that I've thought about and worked on for 40 years come together in a way that makes sense to me, which I just think is an amazing, I actually think that we have many lifetimes, and I don't think that happens very often. And George, I haven't had a very happy life. I'm a mother of four children, and two of my children have died. So life hasn't been easy for me by any stretch of the imagination, but I just think that we are alive at just an amazing period in the evolution of our species, and I'm very grateful for that.
Where do you get the Mayan code? The book?
Where do we get it? Oh,
yeah.
Well, for Amazon, of course. And
you do want to sell it, don't you?
Oh, yeah, from Amazon. And, right, and in the bookstore and from the publisher. The publisher is Bear & Company. So it's just all over the place.
Okay, let's go next. International Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm calling from Vancouver, Canada.
Okay.
I actually have two questions. My first one is, like, I associate you so much. I'm an astrologer. I write astrology columns and do readings. And I associate you so much with Chiron. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard very much about, what the if Chiron is going to play any part in this. My second question is, as far as the galactic center goes, is it going to affect people more who have planets or points at that exact degree?
First of all, answer the second question first.
Okay.
Absolutely. People who have planets in 27 Gemini or 27, around 27 Gemini, 27 Sag,
yeah,
are very, very much more affected by the galactic alignment. And
right.
So 2 weeks ago, as you know, as an astrologer, we had Jupiter-Pluto right on the galactic center in 26, 27 Sag.
Right.
And in my case, I have Moon in 27 Gemini, you know,
oh,
and
yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
whoa, you know. So definitely people who have planets in those locations are more affected. And
okay.
Then as far as Chiron is concerned, Chiron, my book on Chiron came out in, I'm trying to remember, 1987.
Yeah, and I got it.
Yeah, and it's had a big impact on astrologers, and most astrologers are using Chiron in their readings, number one.
Yeah.
And I'm even starting to find, finally, after 15, 20 years, that more astrologers are using Chiron to rule Virgo, which was the real point of,
yeah,
writing that book.
Yeah.
You know, and so as far as Chiron in the middle of this awakening, Chiron is basically in Aquarius pretty much through the end of the Mayan calendar.
Right.
And so it's just one example of many of the planetary positions that suggest to me that we're actually going to make this critical leap. In other words, I tested Kalaman's theory using astrology. And I wrote a whole appendix, because in my universe, if the astrology didn't show this, I would not have adopted this person's theory. And this is a very radical theory that Carl Kalaman has come up with regarding the Mayan calendar.
Well, he I assume when he did this, he stood alone, didn't he?
Oh, he just stood alone for sure, and he's had a lot of people who have been against him, and what's happening is piece by piece, his theory is being proven.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is BJ in Austin.
Hey,
hi.
BJ. Thanks.
It's great to talk to you. I'm really excited about this program. I actually felt that whole shift in 98. I had a spontaneous kundalini rising.
Uh-huh.
And I just have a couple of comments and then a question. And I just wanted to say, I think that it's going to be both. It's going to be an increase in consciousness and crisis.
Yes. Well, it's a crisis right now. We're in,
yes,
the middle of a huge crisis. And person by person, people are waking up and realizing, oh, my God, look what's happening. It is happening.
Yes, and with crisis comes opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the treatment of trauma and how we view trauma is crucial to that. People can awaken through,
yeah,
trauma. Trauma often precipitates an awakening.
Yeah, and let's look at this for a minute from the point of view of, like, quantum mechanics and the fact that the reality that you live in is actually being created by your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that might be going on here is there may be a lot of people who are going through this critical leap in our evolution, mm-hmm, and there may be a lot of other people who just aren't experiencing it. In other words, what you think creates what's going on around you to a great degree. And that may be exactly what we're figuring out in the next 4 or 5 years.
And as we get there in the next 4 or 5 years, Barbara, what are you going to be doing? How are you going to chart this, watch it?
Well, what I've been doing personally as a teacher is I've been teaching Pleiadian agenda activations with my husband, Jerry Clough. And so we've been teaching these activations for like 12 years, ever since the Pleiadian agenda came in. And so when I discovered Carl Kalaman's research, I realized for the first time in 2005 that when we do these Pleiadian agenda activations, what we're actually doing is we're activating the ninth dimension and we're activating the energy of the calendar itself. So I plan to do as many activations as I can tolerate through 2012.
Okay, we'll take some more calls, and we're going to keep you for one more hour, Barbara. Are you available?
Yeah, thank you. I'm here.
All right, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
I have a comment and a question. Basically, I have a theory of my own about the happenings of today and our crisis, as you said, you know, and you may have covered this earlier, but as we all know, history has a way of repeating itself, and
right.
I believe that we are in a continuum of we've actually begun the repeating of a course of events that will lead to, as you mentioned earlier, a sort of fall of the empire,
mm-hmm.
so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and America is starting to look like the next Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought this up on a recent television show, and you know the person that I spoke with, of course, you know, gave me the look of you're out of your mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they were one of the more you know, disconnected folk of this sort of genre of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And my question for you is, what is your view on the 13th sign of the zodiac? There's not much mention of that in our culture,
mm-hmm.
but I have done some research of that 13th zodiac symbol that is sort of underlying.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for your time.
Okay. He's talking about Ophiuchus, which is the 13th sign of the zodiac. And the zodiac represents a division of the constellations on the ecliptic. And so you actually could have a zodiac of 20 constellations or 30 or whatever. And so I personally do work with a zodiac of 12, and that's for many, many reasons. The Mayans use a zodiac with 13 constellations. And so it's just a matter of how you want to divide things up.
All right, Barbara, stay with us. We're going to come right back with you. Another hour, final phone calls, and we'll get also specific with each one of you just to get your take on what you think is going to happen as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.